Not a game, not a game, not a game. We talking about practice.
Now it's time for the takeover.
There is, plain and simple. I mean, I wake up in the morning, I piss excellence. If you ain't first, you're last.
And there you have it, folks. Welcome to the Takeover Sports Podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Siekert, and it is episode 154. We are back for another great episode here, and everyone in the Treasure Valley watching this, we are going to another Fiesta Bowl, and we are super excited. And it's a perfect segue because I know you probably read the title of this video. And so, yeah, no surprises here. We got a very, very special guest. And again, he is the CEO of the Fiesta Bowl. So welcome to the Takeover Sports Podcast, Eric Moses. Welcome, my good sir.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. Welcome, man. I see you're repping the polo. You got the logo there. So exciting times.
Absolutely. You know, promoters are always promoting, so you will rarely see me unbranded, especially in and during bowl season.
I was going to say, this is the time of the year to do it, so well done, well done. And appreciate you taking the time doing this, man. And so let's learn a little bit more about the younger Eric Moses, kind of what got you here, man. So, you know, I want to get the viewers to know you a bit. So I don't know if you've always wanted to become the CEO of the Fiesta Bowl, little Eric Moses growing up, but I guess tell me, like, growing up, like, earliest memory from childhood, all the way till now, like, how'd you become the CEO of the Fiesta Bowl?
Well, I don't know that anybody, you know, grows up saying I want to be the CEO of the Fiesta Bowl or any other bowl game for that matter. I don't even know that I knew as a young person that there were people like me who ran these organizations. You know, most of the positions that I've had professionally in my career are positions that I probably had very little insight into as a youngster. But were things that and opportunities that became that I became aware of as I kind of matriculated through my career. So, no, I wanted to be a lawyer when I grew up. And, you know, my father was a lawyer and had many attorneys in my family. And so I knew from a very young age I was going to go to law school and be a lawyer. And kind of that's what I did. When I got into law school, having just graduated from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, had many friends who were, you know, first class athletes, many of whom ended up playing sports professionally for a living. And I went to law school thinking I'm going to be a player's agent so that I can protect my friends and people like my friends who have this unique skill and ability to earn large amounts of money. Frankly, in some cases, generational wealth for their families. And I want to protect them from being taken advantage of by unscrupulous agents, managers, lawyers, advisors, et cetera, so that those funds are not squandered and can be, you know, used to provide generational wealth. So I went to Duke for law school thinking, all right, this is what I'm going to do. And quickly kind of realized that the life of a player agent in professional sports it was kind of not in keeping with the way I wanted to use my law degree and the way that I wanted to start my career. So pivoted from that and ended up at a law firm kind of as a baby lawyer, being a commercial broadcast lawyer, buying and selling TV and radio stations for large commercial broadcast clients. And it's a long, winding story about how I ended up in sports. But suffice it to say that I was a sports commissioner in Washington, D.C. for about 11 years. Left there and became the president of the DC Defenders in the XFL back in 2019 when the XFL got started its second iteration, not the most recent, the third iteration, its second iteration. Did that for a year before COVID decided that there would be no XFL or pretty much anything else in sports, entertainment, or hospitality, certainly not live events. And then directly before coming here to Scottsdale to run the Fiesta Bowl, I ran the Nashville Super Speedway, which is a NASCAR track in Nashville, which had been closed for about 10 years And then went out there in 2020 during COVID to reopen that track and get it ready for its first ever NASCAR Cup Series race. And did that for 2.5 years. Loved it. Loved Middle Tennessee. Loved being part of NASCAR. But got a call from a headhunter that said, we've got a really great opportunity to helm the Fiesta Bowl. Would you be interested? And I went, absolutely.
Well, that's awesome. And I know you mentioned earlier, I want to kind of rewind. You said you went from, you jumped from North Carolina to Duke?
Yeah, people think that it's, it is a big deal, but you got to remember they're 8 miles apart, right? So I'd spent 4 years at Chapel Hill. At the time, my girlfriend was at Duke. One of my best friends was there. It was familiar. The community was familiar. It was a top 10 law school. And, I held my nose for 3 years, if you will. The thing I like to tell people is Carolina beat Duke 7 consecutive times in basketball while I was there. So it was helpful to be behind enemy lines.
There you go. And so I guess when they play against each other, who do you root for?
I only root for Carolina.
Really? Okay. Tar Heel at heart.
Yeah. I root for Duke's mock trial team. You know, if they're playing something, I'll do that. But okay. What happens is, and this is a funny thing. So I thought when I got there, okay, look, I'm going to get a degree from our rival institution and I should have some amount of allegiance to that school. So when they're not playing against my school, my alma mater, I'll root for them. I'll root for them to beat Clemson and, you know, Wake Forest and other schools in the ACC and what have you. And then what happened was I got there and had classmates who had gone to schools that didn't quite have the sports kind of rivalries and reputation that our two schools had. And so they became rabid Duke basketball fans. And when they found out I went to North Carolina, they antagonized me more and that pushed me the other way. So I doubled down on my Duke hate during that time. and I should say Duke sports team hate at that time, but I love having a Duke degree, which you see over my shoulder back there on the wall. I enjoyed my 3 years there. I enjoy being part of that alumni group nationwide and worldwide. It's fantastic, fantastic university. And so I enjoyed my time. I'm proud to have a Duke degree, but my heart is blue. It's true blue, Carolina blue.
I love that. And yeah, phenomenal story there, Eric. I just had to ask because I know, you know, diehard sports fans, you know, that's just, yeah, you know, they butt heads. So, fast forward to now, you said you got the job it was a headhunter. And so with people being curious and even myself too. So obviously the Fiesta Bowl, it's a, you know, once a year type event. And so I guess what would Eric Moses be doing the other 364 days of the year?
Yeah, I love this question because it gives me an opportunity to let people know that we are a fully functioning not-for-profit that is busy 12 months out of the year. The easiest way that I can explain to people kind of what we do and what this organization is that we are three things at once. So we're a football organization because we put on 2 postseason college bowl games. We are a charitable giving nonprofit, and we usually give out between $2 and $5 million a year to nonprofits that serve this state with respect to youth sports and or education. And we're a live event production company because we put on a golf tournament, a kickoff luncheon event, 2 bowl games, a parade that's been going on for 51 years and various other events. So we are busy in those three buckets all year long, doing things that help to add to and bring positive economic impact to the state of Arizona and also charitable resources to nonprofits and communities throughout this state.
That's awesome stuff, Eric. And, you know, even all the football fans that do watch football, you know, throughout the playoffs, you know, you even got, you know, the Orange Bowl, the Rose Bowl, Cotton Bowl, Sugar Bowl. So curious, I mean, what separates the Fiesta Bowl from those other big time bowl games?
Well, all of those that you named are part of the New Year's Six. And so all of us are currently participants in the CFP playoff system. And so, you know, we are in some ways, I say this humbly, those 6 bowl games have been put above the other, you know, 36 or so bowl games that are out there because we're members of the college football playoff system. We are, as the Fiesta Bowl, the youngest of the New Year's 6, the oldest being the Rose Bowl, which has been around for 100 years. I think Cotton and has been around maybe 90. I think Orange probably around 80.
Oh, wow.
Sugar probably somewhere between 60 and 80. And then Peach Bowl probably around 60. And we're about 53 years old. So our nine founders, and I'll give you a little bit of the origin story of the Fiesta Bowl. Our nine founders were business and civic leaders here in Arizona and in the Valley of the Sun, as we like to say, that were kind of fed up with Arizona State University being snubbed for bowl game invitations. And they decided we'll create our own bowl game so we can ensure that ASU, when they have a good season, that they have a bowl game to go to. And in a very short period of time, those nine founders and literally thousands of Arizonans since then made certain that they were, through their sheer effort and determination and commitment of their time, talent, and treasure, have catapulted this game to the highest levels of postseason college football. And so, you know, quite a feat to be the youngest of the New Year Six, but, you know, frankly, have one of the best reputations in college sports for our world-class hospitality and the way that we treat not only the student athletes and the teams that come here, but their families, their fans, their alumni, our broadcast partners, and everyone who is involved in, frankly, both of our bowl games.
Okay, yeah, that's super cool. And that's a fun little nugget there. I had no idea the Fiesta Bowl was the youngest one. So, hey, the more you know.
We're the baby of the bunch.
You
got to remember, I mean, Arizona is a 48th state, right? So this state compared to those others is fairly young, right?
Yeah, because, I mean, then it's what, Alaska and then Hawaii?
Probably, yeah.
If I know my history / geography right, yeah.
Yeah, I think 1812, I think, was when Arizona became a state.
And I'm curious here too, Eric, because, you know, growing up watching, you know, the Fiesta Bowl my whole life, I always knew it as the Tostitos Fiesta Bowl growing up. And then just to name a few others, it was the PlayStation Fiesta Bowl. And I was like, oh, okay, you know, different look now. And then, you know, now it's the Verbo Fiesta Bowl. So give us a little insight there. You know, what kind of goes into getting like a new sponsorship for the big bowl game? And, you know, what does that process look like?
So it's different depending on the level of the bowl game. All of us that are involved in the New Year's Six bowl games and the CFP process, those negotiations are led by ESPN, who is the exclusive broadcast partner for the CFP games. And so they lead, and with the big sale of the title sponsorship, because what matters to most of these companies most is the visibility that they get through television and media exposure. And then we come in and make certain that we can take that sponsorship and, frankly, you know, bring it down to the ground with activation for real people, whether that's, you know, Verbo is the title sponsor of our parade. Obviously, we do activations game day and in venue, but also leading up to that and all year long. The interesting thing is that, you know, we refer to ourselves here at the Fiesta Bowl as a bowl of firsts. And one of the main reasons that we think we've earned that title is because we were the very first bowl game to have a title sponsor with Sunkist back in the 1980s. We were the Sunkist Fiesta Bowl.
Oh, nice.
And then now something that's commonplace, all of these bowls, whether it's this New Year's Six Bowl or, you know, the smaller bowl, they all have title sponsors. Well, that started here with the Fiesta Bowl. You know, we were the first bowl game to put 1 versus 2 on the field to determine the national champion. You know, back in the day, the media determined through polls, and you'd have battles and disagreements over who was really the national champion that year. But after the 1986 season, we were able to get Penn State and Miami to play here and really determine the national champion 1 versus 2 on the field. So, you know, we've had a lot of things, and the people here have always been very innovative and pioneering. And so we think it's fitting that this year we will host the very first CFP quarterfinal at the Verbo Fiesta Bowl on December 31st.
And perfect segue, because I'm sure you're watching the college football playoff reveal, you know, as the teams are, you know, getting revealed and so on. And then, you know, the 3 seed shows up, Boise State. What was your initial thoughts with Boise State coming back to the Fiesta Bowl for the 4th time in school history for them?
Well, we anticipated that Boise would be the bye team in our game because of how highly they had been ranked by the College Football Playoff Selection Committee. And once they, excuse me, once they won the Mountain West Conference, it was pretty clear that they were going to receive the third seed, and as the third seed would have the benefit and will have earned the benefit to play as close to home as possible. And Phoenix is closer to Idaho than Atlanta is. What people don't realize is that, you know, at least for 2024, this season and the next season, those conferences that have traditional agreements with traditional bowl partners are still honoring those to the extent possible. So that's why Oregon is your number one seed in the Big Ten champ goes to the Rose Bowl, because the Rose Bowl has always been a Big Ten Pac-12 bowl matchup game, right? Yeah. Georgia, as the SEC champ, goes to the Sugar Bowl because there's a relationship between the Sugar Bowl and the SEC. And then the Peach Bowl and the Fiesta Bowl are bowls that have never traditionally had connections or contracts with specific bowl, with specific conferences. So we were free to have interesting matchups like Boise State and Oklahoma in 2007, right? We're free to do that. And that's why so many of our games have been fantastic games. Michigan TCU was a semifinal 2 years ago. Teams that maybe have never even played each other before, but get to face each other in the Verbo Fiesta Bowl because we did not have relationships with particular conferences that mandated that teams from those conferences had to play in our game.
So that's awesome. So you're kind of sitting there, you know, anticipating obviously a Boise State to get that bye, but you're not like ever, I mean, because Boise State's like a, you know, a group of five school, right? They're not like a power four school. So, you know, with you and your team, you're not really like crossing your fingers for a power four school. You can be like, you know, whoever we get, you know, let's go, right?
Yeah, I mean, you want the best possible matchup. I mean, from our standpoint, you want a team that has a fan base that is hopefully large, but is maybe more importantly, enthusiastic and committed to follow that team. And I think as a group of five team and having three beautiful Fiesta Bowl trophies up in Boise at their football facility, I think, you know, and we hope, and we've already seen it because Boise State has sold out their allotment of tickets already, you know, that people will come down. This place is a lot warmer than I'm sure it is in Idaho these days. We've got a track record of success here. And one of the most memorable games in college football history was played by Boise State here at the Verbo Fiesta Bowl. And so, yeah, we were excited about the opportunity to have the Broncos come back here.
And so I'm curious, Eric, did you do you remember watching that game, Boise State versus Oklahoma? Where were you when that happened?
That was 2007, so I don't know, I was probably in my house in Washington, D.C., watching that. But, yeah, I remember the hook and ladder play, and I certainly remember the Statue of Liberty and the post-game proposal.
Yep. Yeah, so fun fact, I was actually at that game, second grade, super young. Our whole family went, and yeah, Eric, I will completely agree. That's just like one of the best games, and it still shows up on social media every single New Year's. It's like, hey, throwback to when Boise State did this, and there's like the three trick plays, and it's kind of what put Boise State on the map, you know, it seemed like almost, right?
Yep, and you know, it's David beats Goliath, right? And so, I mean, that Oklahoma team, I think, had Adrian Peterson on it. So the notion that, you know, this small, you know, kind of group of five team that many college football fans had never heard of could come out and shock a team like Oklahoma with such a rich tradition, such a rich football tradition, was great. And that's what makes college football great.
I completely agree. And I guess away from like a football standpoint, but maybe just like population, city alone, like what do you think a bowl game of this magnitude does to a city like Boise that they get to be in like a New Year's bowl game?
Well, I hope it brings a lot of excitement and enthusiasm and frankly, a lot of local pride, right? Like Boise State representing the state of Idaho, as well as Bronco Nation all around the country and all around the world, I think is a fantastic thing. And to be able to do so on such a big stage as the Verbo Fiesta Bowl in the first ever quarterfinal in CFP history, you know, hopefully, you know, people in and around that state are full of pride. You know, we have one of our Yellow Jacket committee members who's from Idaho and is super excited, has been excited all year about the prospect of Boise State coming here. And us being able to welcome Coach Danielson and Ashton Genty and that team here, we think it's going to be fantastic, and we're all looking forward to it. So hopefully it makes everyone in the state feel a sense of pride, and we're hoping I hate to say it this way, but I hope the state of Idaho is empty because everybody's down here cheering on the Broncos come New Year's Eve.
Yeah, it sounds like I have a lot of friends that are going. And, you know, we've got a lot of alumni out there, you know, in Arizona. I've heard, I think there might be a Boise State bar down there if I'm not familiar. So I
probably
from what I've heard. So it seems like, yeah, you know, there's, you know, that West Coast, you know, being favorable, being able to travel down there. And you mentioned also the man himself, Ashton Genty. I guess, you know, anticipation wise and what's at stake and with like the whole playoff, having a chance to go to a national championship, this is probably like one of the biggest anticipation years in Boise State history, which is super cool. And I know you mentioned Ashton Genty, and, you know, with him being able to be a Heisman finalist, finishing in second place, you know, he's already on the Mount Rushmore in Boise State history, no doubt. And I mean, have you been watching Ashton throughout the season? I'm sure you have. And do you have any memories or, I guess, moments of Ashton Genty so far?
No, look, I mean, I think he put the entire college football world on notice and what he was able to do against Oregon. And frankly, that team put the college football world on notice of what kind of team it was playing Oregon so tough. We saw him play in the Broncos play against San Jose State last month because we were at that game because San Jose State won our annual community service award. Their athletic department did. So we attended the game, and it was a slow start for the Broncos, I will tell you, in the first half.
Yes.
And then they got it together and started dominating. But, yeah, we were able to see how he wears the defense down. Clearly, you know, a very talented running back, somebody who I think is helping to remind people why the running back position is so important. And especially when you have a special back like he is, who can do so much both, you know, out of the backfield, running the ball, but catching the ball as well, running around, through, over people. You know, it gives the offense a weapon that that all defenses have to game plan for.
And there's a lot of controversy right now. Do you think he should have won the Heisman, Eric?
You know, look, I wouldn't have been upset if he had won the Heisman. I certainly feel like, you know, he's done enough this season to earn it. I will tell you that I've not ever seen an athlete like Travis Hunter. The things that he has been able to do to be dominant on both sides of the ball, to play as many snaps as he plays each and every game, to do it with a joy and enthusiasm with which he does it. And the other thing that I think people don't focus on is he's doing all of this at altitude. So think about the amount of energy that it takes you not to get tired, so you can play lockdown corner, but at the same time be a go-to wide receiver on the team, and you're never coming out of the game, and you're doing that at altitude. Think about the aerobic strength that he has to have in order to do that. I think it's amazing. And so if we look at his numbers against what Charles Woodson's numbers were when he won the Heisman, I mean, Travis Hunter's numbers are way off the charts in comparison. So it's I think any other year when you don't have a guy who's a star on both sides of the ball like Travis is, who's a kind of once in a generation kind of talent, mm-hmm. I think Ashton wins it. Any other year, I think he wins it.
I know, and how unfortunate, but how cool at the same time, because I feel like we haven't had a Heisman race like that since, I mean, I don't even remember the most, like, the closest. Yeah, I mean, votes-wise, they said it was 2009, and I can't remember who off the top of my head.
But look, yeah. He's in good company. Peyton Manning never won a Heisman. Right?
True.
He's in good company. There are lots of standout guys who are the guy on their team or the guy at their position in all of college football that didn't take home that hardware. He's taken home a lot of other hardware, and if he puts up, I think it's about 130 or so yards this season, he'll be mentioned ahead of Barry Sanders, who we all know is one of the all-time greats.
Yeah, I think 132 is the magic number, what we're hoping for there. Well, another question here. So, Eric, if you had one wish that could be granted for your job, what would you wish for?
One wish. I would wish to have a group of people who are absolutely committed to our mission as an organization, who see the great luxury that we have to be able to do something as fun as being involved in college football, while still being able to deliver needed and valuable resources to communities throughout this state to help young people in particular, and people who wake up every day and want to get after it and want to be innovative and creative and attack every day with joy and the problem solve, and really just understanding that what we get to do is really special. And I'm not saying that to say that I don't have that. I think, you know, we all know when you're putting teams together, whether it's a football team, a basketball team, or a corporate team, you need people who are going to be carriers of the culture. And so I think having those folks, if you could have a whole team of them, that'd be great. No team is really ever that way.
Right.
You know, you've got some people who lead and some people who maybe are kind of on board
different
and not
dynamics.
So much on board, right? And so I think if I had a magic wand, I'd have, you know, I'd have 35 people who are all on the same page with we're going to get after it. I'd have 35 Ashton Gentes, right?
Wow. Could you imagine?
I can.
Yeah. Well said, Eric. And then I guess this is for the fans too, and I'd love to know your insight here. So what's one thing that these fans can look forward to? One thing, whether they're from Pennsylvania, Dallas, or Boise, SMU, Penn State, Boise State, to look forward to if they were to make that trip to Glendale? What's one thing?
The Fiesta Bowl world-class hospitality. And, you know, that is something that we pride ourselves on here and have since the very beginnings of this bowl game, when our founders were inviting football teams into their homes and serving them steak dinners as part of their experience. You know, this is a state that values visitors, as I alluded to earlier in our conversation. It's the 48th state. It's a place where if you didn't grow up in this part of the country, most people like me who grew up on the East Coast and other parts of the country didn't know very much about Arizona and about this part of the Southwest. And so I think people who live certainly in the Valley, but also in other parts of the state, use these interactions as opportunities to show their state pride, as opportunities to convince people that this is a place that at a minimum you should visit and probably you should move and live here, start a business, move your business here. I've been here for about 2 years now. And within the first 6 months of my time here, I met four separate people who tied their residency in Arizona to coming to and attending a Verbo Fiesta Bowl. Literally came out to see the bowl game, fell in love with the place, went back home, wherever that was, got their affairs in order, and decided to move to Arizona. So that we understand the impact that we can have with these large-scale events, and we take that very seriously, whether you're interacting with, you know, Uber drivers or our hospitality partners at our hotels or restaurant partners, or frankly, my team or others at State Farm Stadium. Everybody understands the power of that and understands that we're trying to make a really good impression for people who take their time out to come and to attend this game.
I love that. And everyone should be super excited because I feel like regardless of the matchup, it should be a great time.
It will be a great time.
It will be.
And I can guarantee the people in Idaho, it will be much warmer here than it is there. I can guarantee it. It's 80 degrees today, so come get some of this heat.
Bronco Nation, bring your shorts. Short sleeve shirts. Let's have a ball.
Some of this heat. We'll keep the thermostat up for you.
And one little nugget about Eric, folks. So if you go to the staff directory, he mentioned one stadium that he'd want to visit in all of college football was the Big House at the University of Michigan. You know, what a weird way to spell Albertson Stadium in Boise, Idaho.
Well, I checked off the Big House this year, so Albertson Stadium is next on the list.
Okay.
But when it's warm.
I was going to say, make sure it's in September. It's got to be an early one.
When it's warm. I will say, you know, before we conclude, I want to thank Coach Danielson and your AD, Jeremiah Dickey there. We sent a little token of our appreciation for Broncos coming back down here to play in our game, and they unboxed them today. And so your players are wearing these beautiful
Fiesta hats
that have the CFP logo and the Verbo Fiesta Bowl logo. So
let's Fiesta.
These are the ones that the team got, and we will make them available to the general public probably sometime next week, or certainly following the following week. So dress like the players do and get a little Fiesta in your life.
I love it. Did you design those? Those look great.
A little bit.
Okay. You gave the green light?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, we'll use these.
I had notes. I put in some things here and there. You know, I double as a marketing person half the time I'm here.
Well, Eric, I appreciate taking this time, man. We will wrap up on, you know, let you get on with your night, have dinner, I'm sure. And so thank you again. But before we wrap up, one last thing. Can I get a go Broncos?
Am I allowed to say that? Well, this is your, so I can say go Broncos. Yeah.
Yes. All right. Well, this has been episode 154 of the Takeover Sports Podcast. Eric Moses, thanks again. New Year's Eve, 5:30 Mountain Time.
That's right.
It'll be kickoff. Bronco Nation will be there. We'll be loud, and we will be proud and ready to bring the house down. So
bring that orange to the valley.
Bring the orange. Wear orange, Boise. Thanks again, Eric. And y'all have a good one, and we will see you next week.
Not a game. We talking about practice.
Now it's time for the takeover.
Buckle up for COVID.
Not the game. We're talking about practice, man.
Dodgers have won it all in 2020. Oh, what a shot from Curry. Diggs. Sideline.
The return to glory.
Now it's time for the takeover.
Well, Dak, here's the deal. I'm the best there is, plain and simple. I mean, I wake up in the morning, I piss excellence. If you ain't first, you're last.